Little Foxes by Michael Mopurgo, Chapter 7. A cold nose in his ear tried to drag him from his dreams. He was dreaming that the swan had brought the foxes to him, and he did not want the dream to end, for he knew he was dreaming and that nothing now could bring them to him. He did not want to be interrupted, and so he pushed a cold nose away, but the nose would not be denied and nudged him awake. Billy opened his eyes. The fox sat beside him, his tail curled around his feet, looking down at him. Billy still revelled in his dream. It was only when the fox yawned and came to lie down beside him, laying his head on his arm, that Billy began to understand that he was living his dream, and that his dream was not a dream at all. Billy sat up at once and looked at the canal to see if the other part of his dream was true. But there was no swan, only the white moon still staring at him from the water. "You're the only one, then," said Billy, looking around him. "You're the only one that got away, and I bet I know which one you are. You're the biggest one, aren't you? You heard them coming, didn't you? Knew it wasn't me, didn't you? Bet you told the others to follow you, and they didn't. Where have you been hiding all this time?" The fox seemed to welcome his caresses, rolling onto his back as Billy's hand ran through his fur. The fur was wet to the touch. "Not raining, is it? Oh, so that's it. You swam the canal, didn't you? No other way you could have got wet all over like this, is there?" "Foxed them, didn't you? Foxed them, good and proper. And now I've got to get you out of here. Auntie May said they'd be back. Can't leave you here. There's nowhere else to go but home. I'll work something out. Don't know what, but something." He knelt up and put his arms around the fox and hugged him close. "I'm never going to let them get you. Never. But you'll have to do as I tell you. First, you'll have to walk on a lead so that I can get you home. You got to learn and learn fast. Only got my belt. It's a bit short, but it'll have to do." Billy slipped the belt over the fox's head, pulled it tight so that it fitted snugly around his neck, and then gently lifted the fox to his feet. There was some resistance at first, a shaking of the head, a few attempts to gnaw at the belt, but a turn or two around the graveyard, and the fox seemed happy to be led, just so long as Billy did not jerk the lead too sharply. As they passed the vixen's grave, Billy wanted to tell her what had happened, but he could not find the words. He had let her down, and he could not bring himself to confess it. The estate was just waking up when Billy came out of the wilderness with the fox. The milk float was humming through the streets, and the lights were on in the paper shop on the corner. The only car he saw was a police car cruising slowly around the estate, and Billy dared not run too fast for fear of pulling too hard on the lead and upsetting the fox, and so he trotted gently, keeping the lead slack. Every few paces, though, the fox would stop and look about him. Billy had to talk him on, calming his fears, stroking his head and ears until he was happy to go on again. The journey seemed interminably long to Billy, but they reached the door to the flats without being spotted. Nothing would persuade the fox to follow Billy through the doors, no matter how hard Billy tried to make him. In the end, he was forced to pick him up and climb the echoing stairway to the 10th floor. Auntie May never woke up until the alarm went at 8. So he felt quite safe as he stole into the flat and closed the front door behind him. But even as he put his hand onto his bedroom door to push it open, he felt someone watching him from the kitchen. The light went on and Auntie May was there, standing by the kitchen table, her face pasty white and drawn without its makeup. Billy kept his back to her, one arm holding the fox tightly to his chest. "Billy? Billy?" Auntie May was crying. Billy was not sure if she was crying with fury or with relief. "Where have you been, Billy? All night I've been up. All night. The police are out looking for you. Have been ever since midnight when I found your bed empty. Now what am I going to say to them, Billy? It's too much, Billy. Too much." She came towards him, gathering her dressing gown around her. "What's that you're hiding there, Billy? Show me. Show me at once." And she took Billy by the shoulder and swung him round to face her. Billy expected her to scream, but she did not. Her mouth gaped in horror as she backed away from him, knocking over the kitchen stool behind her. Get that thing out of here, she whispered. Get it out, Billy. Either you put that thing out of that door this minute or Billy, either it goes at once or you both go. Do you understand me, Billy? Do you understand what I'm saying? Yes, Auntie May, said Billy, and with the fox cradled against him, he walked to the front door and opened it. Goodbye, he said, and was gone before she could collect herself. Billy ran towards the canal, the only way he could go. The estate lay in the triangle of two main roads with the canal behind. The roads led only into the city, and there was no refuge there for a boy and a fox on the run. Billy had often looked out across the canal and seen the hills rising into the clouds on the horizon, and common sense told him that this was where he had to go. There were scarcely any houses on those hills, and that meant fewer people. It was the countryside, an empty place where people went for picnics in the summertime, and where he had always longed to go. Billy had seen it fleetingly, flashing by out of coach windows, but he had never been there. It seemed to him the kind of place a boy and a fox could lose themselves and never be found. As Billy ran across the estate, the fox trotting out alongside him, he could hear Auntie May calling out after him to come back. It only made him run faster. Quite how he planned to cross the canal, Billy did not know, and he had not had time to think about it. Even as he stood now, looking out across the weed-choked water to the far bank, he still had no idea how he would get across, for Billy could not swim. He could splash and kick enough to keep himself afloat for a few brief seconds in the shallow end of the pool in swimming lessons, but then panic invariably overtook him, and his legs would reach for the bottom. It had been different when he rescued the swans. Then he had had no time to think about it. The fox stood beside him panting hard, glad of the rest. All right, so you can swim, said Billy. Comes natural to a fox, I suppose. Nearest bridge over the canal is the main road, and they'd catch us before we got there. No choice, have we? He remembered then that he had not drowned the last time he jumped in. He remembered he had felt the mud under his feet and he had managed to keep his head above the water. That memory and the sight of Auntie May bearing down on him, dressing gown flying out behind her, screaming out for him to stop, was all the spur Billy needed. He pushed the fox out into the canal and watched him paddle away before jumping in after him. He sank at once, his feet kicking out desperately for the bottom, which did not seem to be there as he had expected. He came up again, gasping for air and flailing the water to keep himself afloat. Ahead of him, he could see the fox's white muzzle nosing through the weeds, and he struck out after him, legs and arms working frantically in an untidy dog paddle. But the far bank came no closer, and he was tiring fast. He pounded the water furiously, but no matter how hard he tried, he seemed unable to prevent his body from sinking. By the time he reached the middle of the canal, he had swallowed a lot of water and was choking. And the weeds were wrapping around his legs and dragging him down. And he could see that the fox had reached the bank safely and was shaking himself. And that gave him new heart. But his legs seemed incapable now of obeying him. He knew then that he was going to drown, that there was nothing he could do about it, and no point in struggling any more. He had sunk twice already when he saw a branch floating slowly towards him and reached out for it. He caught at the twigs and hauled it towards him until he could cling to the branch itself. He hooked his arms over it and kicked his legs free of the weed. And as he did so, he found he was moving slowly towards the fox on the bank. So he kept kicking and kicking until the branch edged its way into the reeds and would go no further. Billy threw himself down on the bank by the fox and coughed the water out of his lungs. Only the fox saw the swan glide away in under the shadow of the hanging alder trees, and he stiffened momentarily with surprise. Billy looked up to find Auntie May standing on the bank opposite. Now you come back here this minute, Billy Bunch, she shouted. This minute, you hear. And Billy said nothing, but walked away through the long grass, the fox at his heels. Well, good riddance then, Billy Bunch, she screamed. There's plenty more where you come from. Always will be. Don't think you can come running back to me when they pick you up either. I won't have you, you hear? I won't have you. You take your filthy fox and run for all I care. Perhaps that's where you belong, Billy Bunch, out there in the wild with the animals and with that fox. But Billy was out of earshot by now and running and leaping through the grass. his eyes on the thin grey line of light that was creeping up over the dark and distant hills. Those hills beckoned him all morning as he trudged on through the grass-waving meadows and across the sun-spangled streams, but they seemed to come no nearer. Often in the valleys he would lose sight of the hills completely and become swallowed up in the immensity of the countryside. And when the hills did reappear, there always seemed to be villages or farmyards in the way between him and the hills, places where he knew there would be people, and places he knew they had to avoid. That the police would be looking for them all over the countryside, Billy had no doubt, and he could not doubt that they already knew in which direction he had gone. They would know well enough where to look for them. If he were to be sighted now, it would be the end of everything. They would take his fox away from him, and he would never see him again. And with that terrible threat hanging over him, he moved only under cover, as far as possible, keeping to the hedgerows and the woods. And if that meant going the long way round, then he went the long way round. Only once that morning did he stray too near a farmhouse. He was not to know that the smell of the fox would carry on the wind and draw the sheepdog towards them. They were making their way stealthily across a farm track and then into a cut hayfield the other side when the sheepdog came at them suddenly, hackles up, its body stiff with fury at them, and the fox jerked away violently, snapping the lead, and bolted into the hedgerow. Billy's instinct, too, was to run, but the dog was too close, and he knew he could not run fast enough. So he stood his ground, his spine warm with fear, and faced the hysterical barking and the bared teeth. And then it went for his ankles. He lashed out viciously, landing a lucky kick on its side that sent it scampering away, tail tucked adjectively between its legs. It took several minutes of patient persuasion for him to cajole the fox out from the sanctuary of the hedge. Billy had nothing to use for a lead now and wondered if the fox would follow him up the track. Walking backwards, he whistled him up and called him. At first, the fox sat watching him in the middle of the track, head on one side, thinking. Billy kept walking and whistled again. Whether the fox grasped the idea or whether he just did not want to be left alone, Billy did not know. But the fox came, loping up the lane after him. And after that, he seemed not to want to stray more than a few paces from Billy's feet. And if he ever did, Billy's whistle would always bring him back.